So we begin an hour and a half conversation with the Olympics. So we saw, you know, the various countries participating all on the Seine River. We saw that on Friday. Very colourful event. There were patches where Oriku, I mean, I was watching with you in the office, and there were patches of that ceremony where you weren't exactly enthused. You thought it was underwhelming. Did anything blow your mind at the end of it? By the time the entire ceremony was done, you changed your mind about the quality of the ceremony?
I agree with some of the messages that they tried to portray, but I mean, at the end of the day, if you're looking at the quality of the production and the execution, I think it was right up there. And just the mere fact that we've become very accustomed to opening ceremonies being in a stadium. Remember, when you're in a stadium, it's an enclosed space. You have one control unit. Yeah. You have a director box. Everything is enclosed. And so you can control air parameters, everything within.
Yeah.
The moment you start to extend that, you have to factor for risk, one of which is rain, which actually happened. And just the mere fact that they were bold enough to move out of the stadium. First, I was wondering, what exactly is the plan? How are they going to pull this off? And I think they did an amazing work with the setup, the production, the quality of sound. And I was wondering, like, where are the speakers? Because it's not just that one part of the town. You are looking at close to the Eiffel Tower, and then they come back to a setup that sort of mimics the Eiffel Tower, and then even near the river there was another setup. So it was at different
it
locations.
It was a total of about 30 kilometers, I guess.
Yes, and so it's like different places, and you're wondering, like, what was connecting the speakers? How was the sound able to reach everyone? And what I really loved was the production for the storytelling, in the sense that the, you know, the Olympic flame that was going to be used to sort of be put into the cauldron, we saw that flame, that torch, sort of telling a story with whoever was holding it. Before it was given to Zidane, that guy went through different cycles, and you could tell that there were parts of that that was pre-recorded, and there were parts of it that were live, because at a point you can clearly see the guy is going through some pits, but before he gets to the museum, he comes across, you know, from one end to the other on the river, and just swings across on the rope. You can clearly see that's live, and then he heads into the museum bit where you see that, yeah, that has already been pre-produced. So just intertwining stuff that have already been pre-recorded and what's happening live, I thought was also, once again,
it just goes to show
impressive.
The level of thinking that went into
it. And the execution is not easy, because you can do all the right shots, everything right, but if you don't sort of transition it well, it loses that effect. And there were even moments where we're asking ourselves, is this live, is it not live? What made it easy was that whenever it's live, you can tell because of the rain outside. And so when he steps outside, you can see rain and all that. And then now you'll be able to sort of find out that, okay, yeah, this had to do with the life because it's wet. But I think aside that, it was a really, really lovely ceremony. I mean, they were content about French culture. And you know how progressive the French are. And once they had an opportunity, they were always going to project that bit. I think it may have been subtle, it may have not been subtle, but if I'm looking at the bigger picture, I think it was a good ceremony.
Good one.
Yeah.
Kelvin, let's look at the audacity of what they did. I mean, the Olympics is obviously, like, you know, one of the biggest global, you know, events, not just in sports, I mean, across all sectors. And to think you're bringing the entire world together and you want to deviate from the norm, do something completely different. It is not just about the execution. It's also about the bravery that the French, you know, authorities had to do this.
Well, I think it was all about matching the standards, you know. When you go back to what, you know, Barcelona did back, you know, the ball going into the, to light there. And then what London did with Mr. Bean, and then the famous James Bond together with the Queen when they got out of the airplane, you know, some massive scenes. In Beijing, how... the is it over 10,000 or 100,000 drummers, you know, beating the sound to, you know, make that wonderful and colorful opening ceremony. So it's always about something extra, going the extra mile, you know, to give it. And I think one thing that they did very well was it was extremely educative. If you're someone who loves history, if you lacked any knowledge about French history and the reason why they are, you know, one of the most powerful nations in the world, but hardly would you find, you know, problems around them that they have enmity between this country and this country. And then the alliance goes, you know, brother, in Africa you come and then so many French alliances. You go to the Gulf region now, they have so many alliances. In Europe, you have so many alliances with some of the top guys, Germany, England, you know. So it was all about telling their history, telling their culture from every single, you know, point that they executed this. And I think it was massive. I was pretty much enthused with the educative bit. And, you know, it goes a long way to speak about how they honor or they respect, you know, legends of you know, the game or the various games that we've seen across. Many would have thought, why didn't we bring a Frenchman to go and light the flame with the final Disney? But it had to go to Rafa Nadal because it moved from Zidane to Rafa Nadal. Many would have thought, why wasn't the Frenchman who finished? But they just looked at the magnitude of the impact of every single athlete before it goes in there. And I think I was very much impressed. Everything they did was massive. The opening ceremony, how they introduced the various nations and contingents, it was just brilliant. And I think I loved every bit of it. They took it an extra mile, although there were a few haters that, you know, now people are, you know, bashing at them. They've taken the video of the Olympic YouTube channel itself, and it clearly tells you that something, you know, wrongly went on there. But it was deliberate, you know. We all know these things. They are deliberate attempts. It's not that nobody saw it and criticized it. Yes, I'm sure someone saw it, but they just wanted to create that controversy and the talkability around the Paris 2024 Olympics. So, you know, I was just very much happy with the history bit of it, and I missed most part of it because I was a little bit away, but I managed to catch up later in the evening. I was like, come on, these people just went deeper and deeper into French history to give the world something memorable.
But you know, then again, I give a lot of positive remarks.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I'm the only one. I just think that it was an anti-climax in the end.
Yeah.
Where, yeah, like all these lovely stories, all these legends. I just feel the way the cauldron was lit was a bit underwhelming, to be honest. Because you see, at that point when the hot air balloon went up, I was telling you guys that, okay, is it going to go all the way to the top of the Eiffel Tower?
Yeah.
I expected something more dramatic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I expected
it was too simplistic.
But maybe it's because of how they kept us in suspense. Remember, I was all the way from 5:30 to, I think, 9:30.
9:30, yeah.
So I thought it would be something more dramatic, like a boom, boom. But it's just, no, nothing.
Maybe they are reserving some of that for the closing ceremony. But yeah, what was your take on everything that happened on Friday?
I thought that it was and parts of it were a bit weird, really. the head of Marie Antoinette, I don't know, but I felt like it was nice in many parts, but a lot of it were unnecessary, and you know, it had to be cut out. I mean, you can talk about how progressive you are, but it's an Olympics. You're not. It's for everybody. It's for the whole world. You're not doing it for just yourself. So there had to be bits where, you know, I felt like some of it should have considered the fact that, number one, there were kids watching, and also you know, there were people who don't particularly share in the beliefs of what you're doing.
Yeah.
So you don't necessarily have to do those things. So but yeah, I think that with honoring the legends, they did their bits. I mean, to have Serena Williams, to have Carl Lewis, I thought that, you know, they did really well to honor all of those people. And it wasn't just them. I mean, when you look through the Olympic, the short movie that they made about the Olympics just before they got to the Eiffel Tower, they paid homage to people like Tommy Smith, John Carlos, to Jesse Owens, and you know, some of the greats in athletics at the Olympic Games, and some of the best stories. I mean, look at some of the teams like the USA. They had one full boat, which was like a lot of athletes in there, Italy and all that. So it could tell you that they had made plans for it, and it was really nice to see, you know. And so hopefully the Olympic Games lives up to what we saw at the opening ceremony. And then, you know, I just feel like right now it is still... People have still not gotten into the Olympic stride yet because, you know, usually when people think of the Olympics, all they think about is athletics.
Yeah,
so they are just waiting for it to start on Thursday. But hopefully the whole games gives us something really nice, and then we build up some really good stories from the Olympic Games like it has always given us.
But let's look at some of the, before we move on from the opening stuff, let's look at some of the famous torchbearers and the flag bearers. Snoop Dogg was there. For the flag bearers, we saw LeBron James. We saw, is it Andre Agassi?
I think it was a torchbearer, Simone Degrasse, and then LeBron James, and then we saw Coco Gauff and Lebron James, and then we saw Joseph Bolamwa, that's him in there, and then for South Africa Kani Simbine, so I mean let's look at some of the high profile names
that we saw in opening ceremony, and of course around the entire Friday ceremony. It's definitely giving us the weight of the Olympics and what we are to expect. I mean, these are household names in different sectors, but they've all come together, you know, just to bring the games to the entire world.
Yeah, I think that for someone like Snoop Dogg, I think that he had said it on the podcast that this would be one of the best things that he would ever do. To hold the Olympic the torch and all of that, and I felt like you know, this as a human being, you know, going through your career and everything, how big the Olympics is and being a torchbearer for the Olympics is a huge thing, and so I don't fault him for saying that at all, but I think
and this is for a personality as big as Snoop Dogg.
So I think that for everybody who came in there, you know, I mean, even for Nadal, it was huge for him. And when they got on the boat, you know, you could tell that Serena also wanted to hold it, you know. So they all know how much it means. But I'm just saying that this is just Paris, and this is a lot of these French celebrities who were even there are celebrities that we may not be familiar with. Mm-hmm. But next 4 years is going to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
You can just tell the magnitude of you know, how it would be. By that time, if LeBron James is retired, he would definitely be part of them. There would be movie stars, Denzel, George Clooney, all of those.
I mean,
guys.
It's Los Angeles.
Yeah, so...
I just had, like, something... a counter bit to say to that.
Yeah.
I just thought it was also an opportunity for the friend to really promote themselves.
Exactly.
The athletes.
Yep.
Because... honestly, can someone explain to me why Serena Williams is a torchbearer?
Mm.
I understand she's big, but you see, when you are adding these people to your event, right? Like how London took the chance to give the platform to the Queen, James Bond. These are they are all British.
Yeah.
So I just think it's an opportunity, like of a lifetime,
for global superstars.
Yeah. So for you to be given it to Nadal, maybe you can say, yeah, he's won 14 French Open titles and he's very attached to the country. That's okay. Mm. But Carl Lewis, Serena Williams.
Mm.
You didn't understand the connection.
Yeah.
I just don't get it. Mm. Because, yeah, these people can be part of the VIP, but to give them such a huge responsibility, it's just a bit too much. And looking at even the musicians, there was what, Lady Gaga, Celine Dion.
No, but the thing is
it's
that...
just too much non-French.
The thing is that they need it. Because when Aya Nakamura came to perform, not everybody knew who she was. You understand? Yeah. So I feel like they need it. They just need it. You see, the sad thing is that English-speaking countries have taken over the world.
Yeah.
So... If it's a British event, they can promote their people and it will be fine.
Yeah.
But you see, the
Elton
French,
John will be there. Adele will be there.
Exactly. Yeah, and these are well known people.
Yeah.
But if right now, Rick, if I ask you to name 4 French musicians, it will be tough for you.
Maybe this Freddie Mayweather.
Chance for me to hear someone. Who knows?
But really, why aren't there African performers?
Oh,
because I mean, no, I mean. let's be honest. Mm. When it comes to global, you know, events, there are a few bigger than the World Cup. And there were African performers there. There was Davido there. There was Burna Boy there. Burna Boy has been to the Champions League, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why weren't they considering African stars?
We need to pace ourselves.
You see, the thing about Africa is, at the moment, is mostly Afrobeat.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're looking at the caliber of performances that we had, it's more of a...
More classic?
Gearing towards more classic... Yeah. I just think that the audience is completely different.
Mm.
It would feel very awkward to have Davido come and sing, "I'm on available." It appeals to just
They could have brought Veggie Dream to come and sing to make them a very big band.
Maybe
this World Cup audience doesn't do audience.
Oh, no. The World Cup is more hey.
So you see that?
I feel like...
Yeah.
Olympics is more suit and tie.
No, but I think in a few years it will happen.
Mm. Oh yeah, the way Afrobeat is.
Because I don't know.
I don't think Afrobeat has been accepted to that level yet.
The thing is,
Los Angeles.
See, 15 years.
It won't get there, but just right now.
15 years ago, no African would be considered to perform at the World Cup.
Yeah.
Yeah,
15 years ago,
ever,
and even the Champions League, mm-hmm. it won't happen.
Yeah.
But you see, that's what I'm saying,
a UEFA Champions League.
We are just pacing ourselves.
Final,
I'm not saying it won't happen. No, yeah. I'm just saying currently.
But I mean,
it's coming.
It also happened in one of the most cosmopolitan countries in the world.
Yes,
yeah. France is accepting almost everybody from anywhere. Yeah. And I just think when you look at the number of Black Africans they have there, they would definitely have been a good audience for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway,
Veggie Dream would have made them a big banger, you know. And I think I side with Oracle, even with the British. I think I saw our partners who are going to give us that 3 minute package for every morning on the Olympics, BBC, and they use Loki, Tom Hiddleston, for their promo.
Yeah,
you get it. They don't care about it being in France.
Yeah.
They are looking at promoting their superstar.
Yeah.
And when it happened in London, you could see every single one of very their big superstars.
Okay, guys, present. So one question. When is the Olympics coming to Africa?
No, I don't think so.
Africa, you know. How many Africans do you know?
I don't think
so. Some African countries possible.
Who?
Like which country? Don't mention Morocco.
Oh, why not? There are countries that have potential. They may not be ready.
Okay, sure.
But if Morocco decides it wants to host... You know, hosting an Olympics in 20
hosting
years.
A football tournament is different from hosting the Olympics.
Several
more facilities you need.
No, but you're looking at a country like Egypt. Egypt and how they've become very open to other sports.
Yeah.
If they decide...
They have the budget for it, really.
Yeah. There are some countries that if they decide they want to do it in 20, 30 years, they can.
Yeah.
There are some that they can decide, but...
Well, they've already decided, but...
Some people that they want to come on World
Games.
But you can clearly tell that was Oriku's voice, right? I mean, I know they hear. But then, of course, South Africa can do it if they put their minds.
I think
they've done the World Cup. I mean, for me, if you do the World Cup, you can do anything.
No,
yeah.
It's huge. The Olympic Games is huge.
The Olympics is huge.
South Africa. The thing is that what they're really saying is true, because they hosted a World Cup when football is not even their number. One or two or three.
It's cricket and rugby.
They have rugby, they have cricket, they have swimming. Imagine the other sports.
Are you sure swimming is greater than football in South Africa?
I think football will be fair.
And what it takes to host rugby and cricket is what it takes for you to host football.
No, but what I'm saying is that
how many countries played a rugby World Cup?
I'm not sure about that. But
I'm not sure they'll
but,
be...
But you see, where I'll stop short comparing rugby and cricket to football is that the audience levels are different. Football is like way greater. And for them to actually be able to do football, I just feel that the Olympics... And mind you, in the Olympics, you need football stadiums, right? And you need some of them that have the tracks. And they have that after the World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
What they don't have, though, maybe they have
swimming. So if swimming, cricket, rugby, football is accepted, that's like the basis. What they need, basketball.
Yeah,
look, the first thing that you need to host any type of games like this is a well-planned city,
of course. And they have several of them.
Some people don't have it.
But they have several. They don't even have one, they have several of them.
Yes, they can sort of decentralize it.
Can be
Pretoria,
can be Joburg.
Some people have just one city.
Yeah.
We beg you.
We beg you.
We beg you.
We beg you.
But Terry, I think we are not looking at certain things. I think France in the last couple of years are getting greater with these things.
Yeah.
And the amount of revenue and income being generated in the country is great. It was just this October 2023 that they finished their Rugby World Cup.
You know? Yeah.
And I think just months ago, they were having the, was it the, one of the, these lower youth tournaments also in there. Now they have the Olympics.
Yeah.
They'll be looking forward to maybe the World Cup in the next couple of years. Yeah. The Euros was just 2016 that they hosted it.
Yeah.
And I think they had part of the Nations League when it was spread across. So it's, you know, we overlook some of these things. But what is going to do for the next generation,
mm-hmm.
it's immense. Yeah. And that is what gradually they are looking at. And it even gets them better. You look at their handball team, you know, after watching the handball, I went back to read about, you know, them. And they are not even one of the powers when it comes to handball. But look at how they were, you know, getting dominant in that game that we were watching when they were defeating their opponent. I think it was this Spain? No. It was rather Brazil and Spain who played there.
Yeah, Hungary.
Yeah, France and then Hungary.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Hungary are supposed to be way better than France when it comes to, you know, the handball. But, you know, they were dominant and it prepares them, gives, you know, other opportunities to people. It's just great. And then we just hope that it finishes off in a grand style. Who knows? Some of the fan packs may have these African artists that Oracle talking about it. They could have some, you know, mega system, you know, in there to just entertain some of the African and other contingents who appreciate those music. Yeah.
Okay. But let's now look at, you know, Ghana's contingent there. At the Olympics, I mean. So, as we know it, and for those who are joining us on Facebook, on our Facebook stream, you can see on your screens the schedule for Ghana's participants at this Olympics. On the 30th of July, Harry Stacey will be competing in the swimming men's 100-meter freestyle. And so take note, on the 3rd of August, Giselle Mensah will be also for the women in swimming 50 meters freestyle. 3rd of August, same day as Giselle, Benjamin Azamati and Rashid Saminu will be competing in the men's 100 preliminaries. That's 100 meters prelims. And then we have Rosie Aboa. That's 4th August, athletics women's high jump final. We have Rashid Saminu. Again, 5th of August, it is the athletics men's 200 meters round one. And then the 8th of August, there is the men's 4x100 relay round one. So all of these are just the initial events, because the more they progress, the more the fixture, you know, and the dates would unfold. But these are just the initial parts. Yeah.
Yeah.
Walk us through these events and what we are looking at.
So I think that for Harry, first time ever. I mean, like I keep saying, I don't think that we should stress these boys, though. Then you know
he and Giselle.
Yeah, because it's their first time ever.
Yeah.
I mean, if they go past the first round, it'll be history.
Yeah,
and so I think that for Harry, that's what he should be looking at. The thing about Harry is that he only started swimming for Ghana before the African Games, and he did immensely well. He couldn't win a medal, but he made about 4 or 5 finals, which was really huge for him. And he missed out on the podium by just a few seconds every time. So I'm just hoping that he goes into the pool on Tuesday and tries to do something extraordinary. His race is at 11:23 a.m. So okay. I want everybody to keep that in mind. Also on the 3rd of August, Giselle swims in the 50 meter freestyle.
Did you say 11:33 p.m.?
11:23 a.m.
23 a.m.
Yes.
In the morning.
Yeah,
okay.
In the morning. Yeah. For Giselle, 50 meter freestyle. One thing about Giselle that people should know is that after the African Games, so she finished college.
Okay.
So when she finished college, she wasn't working with her college coach anymore. She had to look for a new coach, which became difficult and all of that. So she has actually been training herself.
Okay.
From I think about a month to the Olympics up until now. I don't know what the arrangement is like in Paris, but I mean she had been training herself for about a month. So that's the update there. But I think that she also needs all the support that she can get. One of the swimmers that we can look at for the future, if she does well here. And I think that she will be consistent over a period of time. So hopefully she gets that level of grace for herself. But also in the 100-meter prelims, Benjamin Asamati is ranked 39th in the world. Mm-hmm. Rashid Saminu is ranked 52nd in the world. They all got in to the 100-meter races by virtue of their positions on the rankings. And the rankings has 56 athletes. So the top 56 athletes all get an opportunity to run the 100 meters. Asamati is 39th. That's he's in the top 40. And then Saminu is 52nd. So they will be running in the 100 meters. The last time Asamati ran at the Olympic Games, he ran alongside Johan Blake, and he finished with 10.13, which wasn't good enough to see him go into the semifinal. Mm. Now, for someone like Benjamin, I'm just hoping that from every race that he's run over the last 4 years, he has learned. And so he would come into this Olympic Games knowing that he just needs to go a step further. Whether it's a semifinal, it will be huge if he makes the final. Mm. But the semifinal mm-hmm. will be really good for him. And I really hope that he's able to challenge himself enough to get there. Maybe Paris is kind to him this time, and then he gets into those places where he can run again, especially in the semifinal. Now, the thing about the athletics is that the 100 meters is that on the 3rd of August, the prelims will begin, then various heats, and then the semifinal is on the 4th. And it is just a 2-hour difference between the semifinal and the final.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And all of it is on the 4th. So, and that's next week Sunday by this time.
Okay.
You know, the 100 meter final will be ongoing. I think it's around 7 p.m.
Okay.
So, he needs to do his massive best to try to get into the semifinal. And when he gets into the semifinal, it's anybody's race. Mm-hmm. He should get into the final and see how well that's for him. The thing about Benjamin that I want him to do is to look at what Marcel Jacobs did in Tokyo.
Okay. Okay.
Before the Olympic Games, nobody knew Marcel Jacobs. Mm. Nobody had heard of him. The only people who might have heard of him were the Italians. And he came into the Olympic Games as one of the people no one was looking at. Then he went into the semifinal. Then he got into the final. Mm. And then he ran the race of his life and he won. The thing is that after the Olympic Games, he hasn't lived up to that hype or he hasn't lived up to that level of success.
Okay.
But what matters is that every time he wakes up, the gold medal hangs in his room.
Yeah.
And so he knows that he's giving himself that opportunity to win it. I just hope that Benjamin gives himself an opportunity to do better than he did in Tokyo. For Rashid Saminu, this is his first ever time that he'll be running at the Olympic Games.
Yeah.
And we all know how jitters can set in. If he is paired alongside runners like Oblique Seville, mm-hmm. Letsile Tebogo, mm-hmm. Noah Lyles, there would be a few jitters.
Yeah.
But I hope he overcomes those jitters. Mm. I have seen him in his races. I know how well he can do for himself. Mm-hmm. But I really hope that the jitters don't set in. The thing is that he just needs to run a sub-10 to get into the next. The sub-10s are difficult to do. So hopefully he's able to do that. And so that's it for the 100 meters. For the women's high jump final, Rosie Aboa is ranked 12th in the world. So she is essentially in the top 15. And I'm just hoping that she also goes into the high jump and with a thought of trying to make an impact for herself. The thing about Rose is that, like I've always said, since she broke onto the scene in 2019, she's been consistent.
Mm-hmm.
She's been winning and winning and winning. The Olympic Games, her first time ever. I just hope that attitude she showed at her first ever African Games in Rabat, she'll be able to show that same level of attitude at the Olympic Games. And if she does that, that should take her far. Even if she doesn't climb the podium,
mm-hmm.
I really hope she gets into the top 10 in the ranking. And that would be huge for her. Then she can build on that because she's still, I think, around 24 years. Next 4 years, she can come back and try to do her thing again. So that's for Rose. And then Saminu in the 200 meter. I think that in 200 meters, Saminu has an opportunity to show what he has.
Yeah. But it's a tough.
Very tough. He ran 20.9
I think 20.12 to qualify, which was a huge feat for him. The national record for Ghana is at 19.97, which James Dassey did. No one has run a sub 20 in Ghana's history ever. And I really hope that Saminu can challenge himself to do that at the Olympic Games. If he does that, it will take him past the first round and into the semifinal. And then also, he can get into the final. Yeah. He may not win the race. Even if he gets into the final, I don't think anybody beats Noah Lyles in the 200 meter. And I don't think that anybody beats Letsile Tebogo to second or third in the 200 meters. Yeah. So I want him to get into the final. Mm. But the fact that I don't think that nobody can beat Tebogo or Lyles doesn't mean that he can't do it. The thing is that he is new and he's coming in. And the thing about underdogs is that every time you get into the final, you have nothing to lose. And that is huge for you. When Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce got into the final in 2008, mm-hmm. nobody gave her a chance to win. Yeah. She went in there and she won her race, and then she became the superstar.
But that's preparation meeting success.
Exactly. And Saminu has been preparing all year. Mm. I mean, he's been flawless all through the year. I forgot to mention, but he ran a sub 10 in the United States, only that the wind was a lot, so it didn't count.
Yeah.
But I think that he can do it again. And in the 200 meters, well, I'm hoping that he's able to do that. In the relay races, that is where I think that Ghana's strength lies. Mm. And I really want to see how things will change for us. In 2021, at the Tokyo Olympic Games, we were disqualified in the final because we changed the baton over after the changeover zone. And so Joseph Olamo had to turn, pick it up from Emmanuel Menu, and then we missed out on an opportunity to finish in a decent place. You know, aside from finishing a decent place, we got disqualified, which was quite embarrassing. I'm just hoping that these guys can come together as a unit. Being ranked number 5 in the world in the 4x100 relay means that there's an opportunity for you to get into the top places.
Yeah.
I have been saying it that I honestly think that these guys are capable of running 37 seconds. Mm. If you run 37 seconds in the relay races, you give yourself an opportunity to get onto the podium.
Yeah.
It gives you an opportunity because anybody who is going to get on the podium might not get into the 38 region. Our national record is around, I think it's 38.07 or 0.03, one of them. That's where the national record is. Okay. If they can challenge themselves to run a 37, then they are pushing themselves into a space where they know they can win a medal.
Mm.
The United States, Jamaica, very fast.
Extremely.
Canada, France, very fast. And so if you look at these four countries, and then there's Nigeria as well.
Mm-hmm.
If Nigeria has a good race, they can place. Then there's us. And I think that, you know, aside from the African Games where Nigeria beat us, we've been consistent with the relay races over a period. Funny thing is that at the African Championships in Douala, we didn't take Asamati, we didn't take Joe Paul, and we still won over Nigeria.
Mm.
So we have an edge over Nigeria. So if we go into the race, you know, in the semifinal, whatever, and then we get into the final, I'm just hoping that all goes well for Team Ghana. Whoever starts, whoever, the baton changing should be good for us. For the first time in a very long time, I need that to happen at a major event. And if that happens, and if the boys are able to move as fast as I want them to, we should come home with something.
Okay.
And if you listen to Joe Paul,
mm-hmm.
he missed out on an opportunity to run in his favorite 200 meter race. The relay is all that he has. He is ready to show that, you know, he still has something to give for his country. And so I'm just hoping that everything goes well. The baton changes is what worries me a lot. Mm. If they're able to do that properly and they're able to run their fastest into the 37 region, I think that they can win a medal. And
that'll be a big one.
I mean, hopefully they win. But I strongly feel like this could be Ghana's year in the relay.
Wow. Kelvin, do you agree?
I strongly do agree, and I think, you know, some of
gets a medal in 4x100.
It's possible. Come on, where were these Italians? All of a sudden, they become powerhouses. It's all about preparation. You know, I think it's something that they plan on the blind side of everyone.
Mm.
I'm not sure even expected Marcel Jacobs and the likes to win the last last Olympics gold.
Yeah.
They were just phenomenal. And you ask yourself, you cannot even hear of one or two names Marcel Jacobs who managed to win the 100 meters.
Yeah.
The rest are virtually unknown.
Yeah.
You will see them at the championships, at the other games, making waves, at the various leagues. But they managed to put together a solid team, worked that cohesion, worked the telepathy, and they came and they won.
But that was because the USA was disqualified.
Yes, so, they were disqualified.
So I'm praying that...
Yes, you get it. You know, some of these things happen, and that is why it is highly possible.
Or an injury to someone.
All you need to do is to work your bit.
Yeah.
And that is why I'm glad that these guys have had the coach. And what inspires me most is we have at least three of these guys who have raced together, or even two. The synergy between Azamati and Jopor. Now you have those two to finish for you. All you need now is... obviously, Botio is going to be part of them to make it three.
Yeah.
Now, all we need is between Fuseni or
and Samino.
Samino, who is going to be that fourth or the starter for us. Once you manage to have that synergy where they understand, because there is no point, I don't dream of in the world anywhere Azamati will miss the baton change with Jopor, or Jopor will miss the baton change with Azamati. Right. They know themselves so well. It's like telling me Shelly-Ann is going to drop the baton when she's with Ellen Thompson, or you say Usain Bolt is going to drop it when he's with Blake or Asafo Powell.
Yeah.
So that is why I am glad we have this team. The last time that we failed with the baton was because these guys were new to each other.
Yep.
But when they changed, and you saw that smooth transition from Azamati to Jopor to finish off when we went for the games to qualify, it was just marvelous.
I think that the arrangement is also important.
Mm-hmm. Very.
Because you see,
every 4x100.
Yeah, the arrangement is very important. When in Tokyo, when Sean started, Sean handed the baton over to Azamati.
Yeah.
The thing was that third leg had always been run by Joseph Odromenu and Emmanuel Yeboah.
Yeah.
Okay. And the two of them had been switching over the whole year. Mm-hmm. You know, every race you have Sean Benjamin and then Joe Paul. Mm-hmm. And then there's always a doubt on who runs the third leg because it's either Joseph or it's Emmanuel.
Yeah. Yeah.
So every time they come in, the dynamics change. Mm-hmm. So if it's Emmanuel, you know, Emmanuel has to pick it up from Azamati and give it to Joe. There's always a little bit of like there's a jitter in the level, the amount of seconds that we spend changing the baton, especially from Azamati to him, and then you understand. So there's always that problem. But when you pair Azamati with Joe Paul, when they were in university together, when Joe Paul was in Tech and then Azamati was in Legon, they did 4x100 for Ghana at the World at the Africa University Games. They know themselves from time since 2017. So when you pair these two people in the same changeover zone, it's always like, I feel like it's better in many ways when you do that, because then it's an opportunity for you to know that, oh, there will be a seamless change. So that even if you lose seconds in the first two changes, the last two shouldn't lose any seconds there. You understand? Because the moment, usually when you are getting into, when you finish the third leg and you are getting into the final lap, usually you can tell that when the changeover is going to happen, the runners are all in the same line, or maybe someone is just slightly ahead of the other person. So the changeover in the final changeover zone is always very important. And that's the reason why I like that Azamati handed it over to Joe Paul at the relay championships. I hope that it happens again. They should just pair these people together in the right place, people who know each other, so that they can do it properly.
Who to finish?
Joe Paul. I don't think that anybody.
So Azamati. I
think Azamati to run the third leg and then to him. But I mean, at the African Games, Azamati ran the back straight, the other side.
Yeah.
Which he did really well. So I don't know. I mean, it's up to the coaches to decide. But I just hope that Azamati hands the baton over to Joe Paul in the final minute, so that you know we can see how that goes for them.
Yeah.
I think Isaac Botio has shown that he can run that back where Azamati runs very well. Okay. And then I think Fuseni will definitely start, because Saminu, within a space of about 5 days, Saminu might have run 4 or 5 races, and he might not be race fit to run in the final in the relay. So I just
depending on how his individual is.
So. So I think Fuseni will start, and then there's a possibility he hands it over to Botio, and Azamati will finish with Joko.
Yeah. Okay. Let's turn our attentions from the Olympics and do some football. and it will be the preseason friendlies. A lot is happening, isn't it? Leicester on the local front. Not exactly local clubs playing friendly games. I'm talking about the friendly matches that probably involved Ghanaians. And we'll talk about one notable one, that's Wolves against West Ham United, because Mohamed Kudus played and scored. But also happening in the Olympics women's football, Zambia were winning 4-1 against Australia. Guess what? It's 6-5 against Zambia now. 6-5 against Zambia.
How can it be 5-2?
Yeah, you are seeing. So Wolves beat West Ham by 3-1. West Ham's 1 was scored by Mohamed Kudus. A sign of things to come, Oreku?
I think it's more of the same. But there's always been those question marks as to what the true level is for a club like West Ham. Can they show more ambition? Can they push closer to the top six, top seven? Because I think for a player like Mohamed Kudus's caliber, you want to see him in European competitions. That's the club competition, the Champions League, the Europa League, because that's where the real heritage is. The times that he was playing there with Ajax, you could clearly see he was a different type of player. The exposure such tournament gives you really aids in your development, and in order for him to play at those type of competitions, West Ham have to do better. They've moved on from David Moyes, Julian Lopetegui, who is arguably maybe more attacking minded. He's now the new head coach. So far, preseason hasn't been too great for them, but you can't really read too much into it. There'll be a lot more signings. A lot more of their players will come back from international tournaments and as well. But I think for Kudus, it's good that he gets onto the score sheet. He's that type of player. If you look at his scoring rates, he always has periods where he scores and then he goes off a bit. Perhaps that's one area that he might have to work on. It's better for you to score, let's say, 4 goals spread across 10 games than to score 4 goals in 2-3 games and then go absent for 7 games. I think that's what he probably needs in terms of his consistency and just staying in the game a bit more. I love this goal because that is another type of finish where I feel if he adds that to his locker, it would definitely help him increase his tally, especially if his future is playing in from the right side. It was very similar to what Bukayo Saka does, where he's very comfortable moving the ball to his right foot and finishing at the near post. It's a very good way to finish because modern defenders nowadays love to show you your weaker foot. And so if they show him the right side and he goes there and scores, it's an easy access to really increasing his tally. So I think, yeah, good goal for him. Definitely shows that he's been working on different types of finishes, and it just means that he wouldn't have to rely a lot more on outrageous goals from outside the box, dribbling all the way, because the frequency of that can't be that much. If you want to reach 15, 20 goals in the league per season, these are the type of goals that you need to score. One touch, bam, very decisive and sharp as well.
But talking about Ghanaians, there's also Ibrahim Osman for Brighton Hove Albion. They are in Tokyo and they played against a team called Verdi. Beat them by 4-1. Ibrahim Osman was in action.
I think that for Osman, young boy who's just coming to Brighton, and he really, really wants to make a mark. And so I don't think that there's a better way to make a mark than to assist, to create a goal, and then to show the Brighton fans that you can play. That way, even if they want to take you out on loan, the fans can say something for you. So I think that Ibrahim is, I have no doubts that, you know, he would be a terrific player. But I just hope that Brighton are patient with him. And, you know, just as we are seeing in preseason, hopefully he takes that level of form into the Premier League, and then he keeps doing his thing. I have no doubts in my mind that he can actually thrive.
Okay. Kelvin, I'll come to you on Kofi Tchere. Because we all know what happened to him, or what's happened to him in the last year. We all thought maybe the upcoming season was going to be, you know, good for him. We've not really seen him in the Bundesliga. And was hoping that under, you know, for Freiburg, we're going to see him next season playing well. Another injury. We don't know if this is going to be another one that, you know, would have an aggravation later. We hope it's just like a one-off, but another injury for Kofi Tchere.
is quite devastating. Very, very devastating for a player who was gradually climbing up, you know, in his career, and especially for the senior national team. I'm not sure after Christian Achu, I'm not sure we've had a player, or possibly Bernard Mensah, but we did not even see his exploit tour. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen a player who carries the ball with so much confidence that you know that in the midst of any chaotic midfield, he will still maneuver his way through to find that pass for the forwards. And he exhibited that in the, you know, few games that he played for the Black Stars. So after his injury came, many were worried, oh, when is he coming back? Thankfully, you know, he had the surgery, started his recuperation with FC Barcelona. Everyone thought, come on, this gentleman was just coming back in the next, you know, month. And all of a sudden, another blow to him. You know, it just calls back, you know, the situation where Abu Dhabi found himself. The consistent injuries, it only ravages your career. Now, how long is it going to take him to be out? Mm. How confident is he going to stay that if I put in this effort, I am going to return this date? And even if he returns, how is he going to get that confidence to play like he used to when he was very fit and was on the ascendancy? This was the peak of his career where you'd have expected that any footballer would enjoy the years. Imagine a fully fit Kofi Tchoe for the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. It would have been phenomenal, not just for club, but for Ghana as well. But now he's struggling with it. And I don't see any, you know, gladness coming from him. And for footballers, they always tell you, anytime they are injured and it takes that length of time, for them to recover, it is great effort and then some sort of great resilience. How many players are going to be like that? Unless you are maybe a Ronaldo Luis de Lima, or let's say you are someone like Zidane or Jack Wilshere. After Jack Wilshere's injury, was he ever the same again? No. How many players? Even Eden Hazard at Real Madrid, he virtually lost his confidence. And for someone like Kofi Tchoe, the theory is a big blow, but I just hope that you know, he can just have this surgery, you know, as quick and early, and then get back to full fitness. Other than that, it's been just so bad and so sad for him.
Mm. Still on preseason friendlies, Orioku, what happened to Chelsea?
Oh, you! Before I come to Chelsea, let me just touch on the Tre issue quickly.
Briefly.
Some bit of context, which I think is very important, is okay. That when he was about 16, 17, playing in the lower divisions in Germany, he had an ACL injury. That's what he had a couple of years ago, the recent one.
Mm-hmm.
So, to put it out there, he's already had an ACL injury when he was young.
Okay.
Now, the ACL injury, that's the anterior cruciate ligament injury, is the worst type of injury any footballer can get. Yeah. When he got it all the way back, you know, before turning 18, he missed about 10 months of action. But at that time, he was young. His bones were much stronger. His muscles were much stronger. So he came back, was able to bounce back, and played like he never had one. But if you realize, he actually started as a winger, mm-hmm. had a lot more burst, a lot more pace, but started to slow it down, came into midfield after he recovered from the first one. Unfortunately, the thing about the ACL injury is that it's almost like the muscle or the ligament that connects mm-hmm. your thigh to your leg. And once it tears, unfortunately, God has made the body in a way that it cannot heal. And so what happens is that they pick your ligaments from elsewhere, or your muscle from elsewhere, and then they tie it together so it connects your thigh to your leg, and they sort of do surgery, put it together. And so in about 9-10 months, the body will naturally grow it into it, and then it will become another ligament. But the truth is that it will never be as strong as your natural one.
Yeah.
So that means that you are always at risk of it coming back again. That's why we saw Zaniolo Gyan ACL injury right after he recovered from the previous one. So perhaps...
I mean, Michael Essien has suffered that twice.
Yeah,
the number of the players. Also,
yeah, the knee is really delicate. So perhaps that's what's come back. Because remember, he came back last season and complained about when he was running, he was feeling a bit of pain, went through the whole summer, came back, started training again, and then the strain started coming back again. So I can't imagine what the player is going through, but it's really, really difficult. But sometimes, you know, that's what happens. You cannot control it. And unfortunately for him, he's 28. Unlike when he was 17, and it would have been much easier to recover from it. This time around, he's much older. And you feel for Freiburg fans because he's made just 12 appearances since signing in 2022. Yeah. And there was a lot of talk about that move, a lot of hope that could perhaps be the step to a big move for him. But it's rather unfortunate that it's not gone as planned. But I don't think it's over yet. We've seen players bounce back. And with the way he plays his football, it doesn't really require a lot of speed and his new playing style. I just feel a lot more patience is required so that he heals fully. And I think he can definitely get back to his best. Mm.
Now to Chelsea.
To be honest, it's just preseason.
Oh, okay.
It's just preseason.
But it's the second game.
Yeah, it's just... For me, it's...
First game was against Wrexham. Yeah. It was the same first game for Pochettino. He won 5-0. Yeah. Maresca drew 2-2.
Yeah, I really don't care about... the results in preseason, they don't mean much. Okay. We saw Pochettino win all preseason games by one, and then we went into the new season. It's almost like we didn't do anything preseason. Okay. So
there's the opposite. Preseason is bad, but regular season is, you know.
I mean, that's the hope for Chelsea fans. But okay, the truth is, yeah, bringing a coach who pays a lot of attention to detail.
Yeah.
He wants his football to be played in a certain way. It requires some players to play in a certain way. Sometimes coaches insist with how they want to play in preseason just to show management and people above them, and even the players themselves, that look, you cannot play my system.
Mm.
So you can see there are some players who are struggling to play out at the back. The goalkeeper is making a couple of errors here and there. Center backs, but they are still giving the ball away. It's just a way of communicating to you that, you see, you're not comfortable. This is how I want to play.
Mm.
And if you cannot play this way, then imagine when we actually start the season. So sometimes these preseason results...
So is that why Chelsea have signed Johansson?
Yeah, probably. I feel like that is a Maresca signing, and has probably seen enough from the two. Remember, he's been with the team for some time now, and has seen that perhaps the goalkeeper is very crucial to how he wants to play, and none of the two keepers maybe have what he demands at the moment. So for me, I think it even goes beyond that one signing. We're starting to see how Chelsea want to play. There are obvious mistakes. If preseason you are winning 5-0, 6-0, then nothing has really changed.
Mm.
This is a new team undergoing change. There will be there has to be mistakes for you to learn. And so I'm very patient. That is the path that Chelsea decided to take. Okay. If they continued with Pochettino and they came preseason and they lost 4-0, the outage would have been twice as worse because Pochettino should be in a better state. He's worked the team for 1 year.
Yeah.
But this is a coach who's coming, trying to implement new ideas. So, yes, that's the reason why you play preseason.
Mm-hmm.
There's no point deduction. There's nothing. You don't feel it in any way. We move on. Next game is just a learning process. The challenge is that, can they learn quickly to at least a good standard before we play Manchester City when the season starts? That is the big challenge. And that's why you don't want the level to be as low as what we saw in Celtic. Because although it's preseason, I just think the nature of the four goals and even the chances Celtic created, it was just too many.
Very good chances.
And it feels like there's just too much to do for the Premier League, which is just around the corner. Maybe he has to improvise. Number one, the defensive line, way too high.
Yeah.
Way too high considering the center backs that we have and the pace. There's a general lack of communication. And also with playing out of the back, we don't have players who are too adept with that currently. That would probably change when the full squad comes in. And, you know, midfielders will have to show for the ball, like Palmer do, come back into the squad. But you do want the overall level of the team to be much higher than what we saw at Celtic. So I think time will definitely review a lot more things under Maresca.
Mm.
But so far, I don't think there's any need to panic.
Okay. Kelvin, he says it's preseason. He's explaining plenty. It takes like 10 minutes of the time.
Hey.
But I mean, Arsenal, for you, preseason or no preseason, you are winning.
Yeah, we need to take matters seriously. You know?
Right from preseason.
Yeah, you cannot joke. And Arteta was asked how he was going to win the league, and he said 114 points. That is winning all the games, and we all know that's not possible.
So is he saying he will not win a league?
No, I think he's only telling, you know, himself that he needs to do more.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to go extra, because if Arsenal had even picked up 3 points at home against West Ham, 3 points at home against Fulham, the Gunners would have won the league, you know, if everything stayed with that scenario coming in. I think Arsenal are doing their bit. A number of their players weren't in. Mikel Arteta, for the first time, giving opportunity to the youngsters. I know you are screaming. You just, let's finish that.
Yeah. Sports Ultras.
This is Three Sports.
Anyway, we are continuing. And Kelvin, you had a floor.
So I think Arsenal are doing their bit, and Mikel Arteta doesn't want to take chances. This is the first time in as many years I am seeing Arteta since he joined Arsenal giving opportunities to, you know, the youngsters to start, you know, the preseason. I saw Heaven, I saw Ethan Nwaneri, and then later on we saw a couple of other players coming in, Reece Nelson starting the game. I think he's only given us glimpses of what to expect. Later today or tomorrow, we expect Calafiori to also join the Gunners in the USA, and I think he would have the full complement of his defensive setup, and we'll wait for the likes of Bukayo Saka and then Declan Rice to also join the team later on. And I think it's impressive, you know, the showdown against Manchester United. It was positive, you know, the energy was still there. You could see what Arteta wants to do. There seems to be some slight variation from how he wants to play. I don't know whether because Bukayo Saka isn't available on the right-hand side of Arsenal's attack, and then Gabriel Martinelli had to start from the bench. But clearly, he's given, you know, that indication that he will still bank his hopes on a false nine. Someone like Kai Havertz and then Gabriel Jesus, and he wouldn't be prioritizing, you know, a proper, you know, center forward. And all Arsenal fans, if you are looking for that, for him to go into the market and buy anyone, you should just forget it. But I think it's a good start to the preseason. Winning games also sets you up in a very good mood for the start of the season. And I think it's good enough Gabriel Jesus managed to get his name on the score sheet. And my main focus was on Thomas Partey, and I think he equally did very well. If you hear that Arsenal are still trying to get Miguel Merino into the team, it clearly gives an indication that Partey should start thinking, am I the one going to be dropped? Because there is no way Arteta is going to touch someone like Declan Rice when he gets back or he starts the season and he's in the team. Mm. He's not going to drop him. But you start thinking, what am I going to do exceptional to keep Jorginho on the bench? And then if Merino comes, I should still have that opportunity to play for Arsenal. Very positive signs. Bad goalkeeping, and Arsenal are going to struggle. David Raya. I don't. You know, there's one thing I don't understand about all those having the holidays that did not play most minutes at the Euros. Where did Germany get to? I think the quarterfinals, right?
Yeah.
Kai Havertz was almost playing every single game. He's back. He's back with Arsenal. David Raya, goalkeeper, he kept just a single game, and he's away from the team. I don't understand. They should come. We need them to start the season. You know, we need them to start the season and then start on a high note. But maybe you'll also spare them that game stress, because, you know, people have already started getting injuries in their teams, and it doesn't look too good. So we just wait to see what happens. But what I saw from the Gunners yesterday, I think it was impressive.
Okay. Yeah, do you have anything to say about Man United?
No, I don't. I just want to say that this season there'll be a lot of pressure on Erik ten Hag.
Mm.
United fans are still in that bubble. You know, okay. It's not his fault.
It's a bubble, eh?
He's good. Yeah, I mean, they'll get out of it. Yeah. I mean, they'll get out of it.
I don't think it's just the fans though, because they've given they want to keep him at the club longer. The authorities, the management.
Don't worry, they'll get out of it.
Mm.
Right now, there are injuries to Euro and Hoyland.
Yeah, yeah. After this game.
Yeah. He has his excuses for if he loses any of the games in the first 10 games.
Mm.
I don't have Euro or I don't have Hoyland. So, yeah. I mean, the thing is that I think that United, like I'm saying, United fans will get out of that bubble. And I think this season, the season where they'll get out of it. And also, Andre Onana is not a goalkeeper who would take you to win the league. It won't happen.
He plays too much.
Yeah, I mean, it won't happen. Yesterday, the goal that he conceded was the same goal he conceded at the FA Cup final. It was the same goal he conceded against Bayern Munich in the Champions League. Yeah. The same goal he conceded against Copenhagen. Look, he has conceded that goal so many. I've seen the same goal he conceded against Arsenal at the Emirates, Declan Rice shot.
Yeah.
He has conceded that goal so many times. I don't know why it is difficult for you to dive to your right-hand side at the near post. Yeah. Like, how difficult is it?
Mm.
And he always misses it. So, I mean, I don't know, but I really hope that you know, some good results comes to United this season. But I don't see how it will happen. And
I'm sure it will happen.
And I know that you know, United fans will definitely get out of that bubble this season, because look, if Erik ten Hag doesn't, especially in the first five games where United have to play Liverpool on the 1st of September, they have to play, you know, some games that they are expected to win. Mm-hmm. If they don't win those games, then there'll be pressure that will start mounting. And, you know, I know that usually when a manager wins a trophy, you know, there's usually a hide behind, you know. The manager hides behind it and says, oh, but I've won the trophy, so it means that I can win another. But if the football is not good and the results are not good, you can't see a future from what you're looking at. So, I mean, hopefully it works out for United, but I think that it still doesn't look too good for me.
Okay. Producer, why? Is the Chelsea highlights the only one you have?
Bad way to... No, but wait. If you look at this, and your coach decided to put Chaloba at home and send Badiashile. I don't get coaches, but how do you...
But
do
I think
this?
The mistake started from the goalkeeper anyway. That pass was bad.
They put Badiashile on the... So pressure. Get it back to the goalkeeper.
Well, that's...
It was the
point.
Simplest decision for you to make.
That's another point. Anyway. On that goalkeeper note, we have our panel game coming up. And it's very simple. Start, bench, and drop these Premier League legends. And they're all goalkeepers. A is Peter Cech. B is Schmeichel. Peter, not Kasper. And then C is Van der Sar. Who wants to go first?
Wait.
Start, bench, drop. Okay, let's start with the starts.
Peter Cech.
Okay. I'll start Cech.
You start Cech?
Yeah, I'll start Cech.
Peter Cech.
Okay. Yeah, I'll start Cech.
Cech. The trouble
and
is...
And open lemon inside.
No.
So you start Cech. Everybody agrees to start Cech.
Yeah,
start
Cech.
Wow. Why though?
Cech was exceptional. I mean, conceding...
15 in a season.
I mean, no matter what kind of defense you have, you still need to be a really good goalkeeper to make sure that you know you don't concede.
He was almost excellent that season.
Let me give you an example. That Ancelotti's AC Milan team had a really good defense, but look at how many goals Dida conceded.
Yeah, exactly.
So it just puts you into perspective that I think what Cech did in that season was just incredible. Mm-hmm. And you know beyond that season,
I mean, it wasn't just one season.
He kept showing it consistently. Yeah. I mean, even in his latter stages at Arsenal, you could see that he was just really old and all of that. But I think that Cech is a really good goalkeeper. He doesn't get a lot of the plaudits that he deserves.
Yeah.
But I hope that, you know...
I think I've seen too many legends mention him in very high praise.
No, usually when they are mentioning goalkeepers, it's either Casillas or Buffon.
Yeah.
Like, nobody really mentions him. But I think Cech is like...
And to everybody here, it's not just the goalkeeping section. It's in almost every department. Is there something about the players who play in Spain and Italy? Is it about being exotic or something? Because it's almost as if once you play for some of these clubs...
I think what didn't help.
Oh, you play in these leagues.
What didn't help?
Czech Republic, right?
Because of Czech Republic. Yeah, that's what I think.
I don't think.
You think it's because of his nationality?
But
there are too many players who come from high profile nations, right?
Buffon gets his praise because of Italy.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Buffon gets that praise because of Italy.
I'm making a point.
Yeah.
There are too many like high profile players who come from some of these top countries. But because they made their names in England or say in Germany, they don't have as much praise as some players who do not necessarily come from the top countries but play in Spain and Italy.
Well, Terry,
I don't know if you understand. Terry, I don't know if you understand my point.
I think so.
This Turkish boy, the Madrid boy,
Aragula,
great talent. I like him, right? Mm-hmm. But you'd be surprised, no matter what a lot of the boys who play in the Premier League would do,
mm-hmm.
some of these boys would get the Ballon d'Or before some of the boys in the Premier League.
It's almost as if it's a Real Madrid effect. It's the Real Madrid effect. Sincerely, it's a Real Madrid effect. If 2006...
Because that has never made sense.
If 2006, Fabio Cannavaro won the world's best player ahead of Thierry Henry and all the others.
Yeah.
They should tell you it was because he was at Real Madrid and he played for Italy and they won.
Would Jude Bellingham have been close to the Ballon d'Or if he did the same thing he did last season?
It was
in the Premier League for any of the top clubs. I don't think so. The kind of football Salah played for Liverpool for about two or three seasons, had he played half for Real Madrid, he would have been in the Ballon d'Or race.
Obviously.
With a big shout, not just in there.
Yeah, it always comes.
I think a lot of the journalists just don't.
Yeah,
they're not fans of English football.
Yeah, because
that, I mean, and to say, like, so to speak, the journalists who, and even the English journalists themselves are not like, and that's why when people say, oh, the English are full of hype and all of that, I think that usually when you read Henry Winter or Sid Lowe, you know, these English guys write about Spanish players or write about Italian players, it's a bit more different than if they're writing about an English player. And you can just tell that they rate these guys more than.
But these same journalists always say the Premier League is the toughest league in the world.
No, because
how is the best player there not comparable to best player in
So you see that I think that when. So with the Premier League, what the Premier League is that it's like the Premier League is like it's almost like a level playing ground. You know,
I think the gap in quality and talent in the Premier League is not as huge as
Before Pep came, how many times do you see someone win a league with so many points or whatever. Yeah. It was always around 73 points or 80 points.
Yeah.
And so it was like a level playing ground for many years. Now that Pep has come, it has changed.
Yeah.
But when you look at Spain, it is Barcelona, Real Madrid.
Yeah.
These two guys are very good and everybody's good.
Everybody's good. Or bad.
You know, like good. Yeah, bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, not very good. Excellent.
Yes.
Okay. These guys are excellent. Mm-hmm. And everybody, there's nobody at very good.
Mm-hmm.
There's good.
Yeah.
So
credit.
So yeah. So you get to the, and so there's like a stark difference between what Madrid and Barcelona can do and what the other guys can also do. If you go to Italy, Juventus, Inter, AC, okay, there are three of them. Juventus, Inter, AC.
Yeah.
Over the years have strengthening themselves as, you know, really big clubs, whatever. And I think that sometimes the history also counts for a lot. You understand? There's a reason why if a player plays for let me give you an example. If Lampard played the football he played at Chelsea at Madrid, he would have won the Ballon d'Or.
Yeah. Easily.
Yeah.
Easily.
He would have, if he had played it at,
20 goals
if he had, if he had played at Barcelona, he could have won the Ballon d'Or. Yeah. He could have gotten like really close.
Barcelona that time would never see Lampard.
No, I'm just saying.
But he's just saying, I'm just saying
that. Yeah, like if he went there. Yeah. And you see, I think that a lot of the times too, sometimes it's the club that you play for.
Yeah.
Because look, in people's minds, Real Madrid, historic club, big club, Barcelona. So look, no matter how many goals Diego Forlán scored for Atletico Madrid, nobody still mentions
him. Even Falcao.
Yeah, exactly. They don't care.
Yeah.
You understand? And look, when you play, let's say,
look at the year. Was it 2010 Wesley Schneider? Everyone knew it was him. Everyone knew it was him.
Against a man from one of the top two in Spain.
Exactly. So
but
you see,
I mean, think about Eden Hazard at Chelsea.
Exactly.
The six seasons or seven seasons he had he played three of those seasons,
he would have been close.
That's why Ronaldo's achievement.
That was the height of Ronaldo and Messi.
Yeah.
But I think that Hazard could have.
I mean, in that period, he, Luis Suarez, and a couple of other people,
Neymar
were the closest to the big boys. Anyway,
see the another thing is that have you ever thought of the fact that someone like Neuer also never gets mentioned when you're talking about top goalkeepers?
Yes,
I think me. I mentioned Neuer.
I rate
above all of your olden day Buffon. Take your Buffon away, bro.
So you see, look, Neuer, Kahn. I honestly think Kahn is at the same level as Buffon.
Yeah,
I think Kahn is at this.
Yeah,
I think Casillas would just edge Kahn a little bit.
Yeah,
but every time nobody mentions Oliver Kahn anywhere, and it's shocking.
Yeah,
but you know, you get them mentioning, sometimes they go as far as mentioning some.
Even Casillas. I don't know, but Oregu, Casillas was top.
They go as far as.
Casillas was up there.
But you see, Casillas was good. The conversation here is he really
the very best.
Like the very best. Yeah. When you mention all the goalkeepers we've seen in football.
Me, if I'm talking about
game changers.
Yeah. Look,
Casillas was in the same era as Buffon, no?
Yes.
He was in the same era as Peter Cech, no?
Yes.
Yeah.
He was in the same era to a large extent as Oliver Kahn, right?
I don't think Casillas was
all of these, you know, you are mentioning there, unless you go back to Yashin, there was never a period that it was categorically accepted by every human being.
He was the only one. Yeah.
For like 6 years, nobody could touch him.
This
is not a guy who was just a goalkeeper. He was a footballer. He actually brought that thing back into the sports that everyone associated with him.
As for Neuer,
his confidence. Look, this same guy climbed the Ballon d'Or podium with Ronaldo, Messi, the two best players. I mean,
when it comes to Neuer, I think
Neuer PR one day will get on it.
No. I think he did. And you see, that's another reason why sometimes I feel like the Germans annoy me so much, because
they don't
preach
it too well.
Why are you saying you don't want a star player and you want to play as a team?
Yeah.
It is all part of the game. Yeah. It is you need that person, and Neuer is that person for you. Yeah. Like, look, if the Germans were just a little as loud as the Spaniards are, Neuer could have won a Ballon d'Or, and it would have been so easy. I don't know why they don't make noise about it, but back to your question, I will start check. Bench Schmeichel and sell Van der Sar. That's mine.
Okay, quickly.
I think the same order goes.
Yeah. All right, so I'll halt you guys. We'll take a second commercial break, and when we come back, we'll go straightly into the game, and then also we asked the listeners quick fire to serve us some quick fire questions. We'll answer them before we get out of here. So we'll be right back. So welcome back, and the conversation was still ongoing, but we'll go straight to the game for the purpose of social media. We'll go straight to the game, and guys, I'm taking it again. So start, bench, and drop these Premier League legends. We have Peter Cech, Schmeichel, and Van der Sar. Everybody agrees to start Peter Cech.
Yeah, we start Peter Cech.
Of these three?
Yes.
Who is benched and who is dropped? I'll go with you since you are talking.
Peter Schmeichel is on the bench, and then we'll sell Van der Sar. Yes.
Van der Sar.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tono. Yeah,
yeah.
There are two United legends.
No, same. Star check, bench Schmeichel, and then sell Van der Sar. No, you see, the thing is that look, if it comes to the attitude, the character, you would probably select Schmeichel ahead of Cech.
Yeah, I mean he's a bit more
charismatic.
Yeah,
but just the art of goalkeeping. I mean, I think that Cech was just it.
Yeah. Cech was. He was a beast. Oracle.
I think same order.
Oh, same order.
Yeah.
So Cech is kept in post.
Yeah.
Schmeichel is benched for emergency purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Van der Sar and Yano.
Oh.
Nicolas Anelka would not agree.
That's an order.
Anyway, what is luck? For many, luck is that glorious moment when you find money in your trousers right when you're broke. For others, luck is being picked out of a crowd for a reward. For us, luck is a life-changing event, and we believe everyone deserves a shot at it. Luck is coming with prizes so exciting they will make your head spin. Want to be the luckiest? Just dial *712# and get your ticket. The more you buy, the better your chances of winning. And remember, when you hear that catchy jingle, it's your cue to pay attention. It could be your lucky day. Luck is on its way to you and your community, so stay sharp. The luckiest, luck is everywhere. So we are getting to the end of the show, and we asked you on social media to send us, you know, questions for the panel, and you have dropped them. We've selected some of them because of time. Kwesi Ewusi Nunu, you say you're from Labadi, and your question is to Oriku. Oriku, you have a question. And the question is, Oriku, are you concerned with Chelsea and their poor start to the preseason? The question is from Kwesi Nunu, though.
I think, just a bit. I always said that it's preseason. That's how big it gets. It's just preseason. It's just a glorified friendly. And at the end of the day, you have to consider the intensity levels are not the same. You don't want to stretch your players out and get too hurt. You are learning new things. And, you know, Celtic have been with Brendan Rodgers for a while now. They've been playing preseason for a month. This was, like, I think their final game.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of fitness, intensity, tactical understanding, Celtic are way above Chelsea at the moment. It doesn't mean they're a better team than Chelsea, but it just means that they are way higher when it comes to the preparation ladder. And so I wouldn't read too much into the game against Celtic. Maybe you might be slightly worried considering some of the goals that they conceded and then the attitude. But I do genuinely believe that there were some moments in that game where you could see the team playing well, mm-hmm. moving the ball through the defense mm-hmm. of Celtic and creating some good chances and opportunities mm-hmm. as well. So I would actually be excited if I'm a Chelsea fan. I don't think there's any reason to be worried currently. Yeah.
Okay. This one is from Bernard Hammond from Sakumono. It says that, Kelvin, now that Mbappe has left PSG, is the Ligue 1 title race more wide open? Who are you picking to win this year?
Well, I don't think it's wide open. It still goes to PSG. They have too much quality, and now Enrique can afford to play without Mbappe's flex. Last season, it was more like he was flexing them. This season gives him that opportunity to put his trust in the likes of Goncalo Guedes and then, is it Ramos? Ramos instead, that center forward. And, you know, it frees the team more. And this is the point where I think that Dembele will be more explosive. Just that he doesn't score much, but the goals will come from the other end. And I think Fabian Ruiz, after that excellent European Championships, will be also more dominant and commanding. Mm. The only thing they are losing is Mbappe. Fine, goal scoring goes off, but the team works this time better as a unit than relying on Mbappe. So it still goes back to them, because I don't see the rest of the pile, how they are going to, you know, overcome the strength that PSG actually carries. And we know how Enrique does his things. He's going to come good.
Okay. Yeah. So the question to you is from Kwesi Frimpong from Kumase. Says, yeah, do you think Man United will make top four next season? Yeah, I was laughing already.
I think so. I think that this time they push harder to get in.
Mm.
The thing is that these days you can't really tell what kind of United is going to show up.
Okay,
will it be the United that played against Brentford at home in last season, or it is the United that showed up against Man City? So you never really know. Mm. But I strongly feel like United will make the top four. They just need to get their players fit,
yeah.
And I think that they can work something.
Mm. And that's how we wrap up here on Sports Ultras with me, Theo Inyan. I've been here with Yafo Sulabi, Kelvin Osuansa, and Oreku Ampofo. Gentlemen, thank you very much for, you know, coming and, you know, with your contributions as well. They've been greatly...